You're listening to Cadence, a podcast for creatives. I'm Hafsa.
And I'm Yan.
And if you're new to the podcast, Cadence is a conversation around topics that we wish we'd been more informed on when we started out in our career paths. The hope is to arm you, the listener, with some takes and tips that might be of service as you venture out on your own unique path and just to have a fun conversation.
We want to thank Ann Arbor District Library and Fifth Avenue Studios for having us in this beautiful space. Thank you so much.
And we're here on a game day, which I always never fail to forget.
Against MSU. And a night game.
Night game, which is fine. Mm-hmm. Everything's fine. We're here today with Chris Plum, one of my good colleagues and greatest friends from past work life in the tech industry. He is a creative director, web developer, designer, and musician who resides in Ann Arbor with his rock star son. He is a foreign film fanatic, self-professed vintage video game nerd, love that, and practices meditation through the acts of both consuming and creating extreme heavy metal. He holds a Bachelor of Fine Arts from the U of M School of Art and Design, and has since lent his expertise in web development and design to companies in the technology sphere, including Duo Security, Cisco Systems, Edge Delta, and currently Clarity. So, hell yeah. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that introduction. And, you know, as a parent, we all love our kids very much and we want to give them all the best superlatives. But I really mean it when I say rock star, because my son, who is in seventh grade and is 12 years old, has, I think, like 4 songs on Spotify.
What?
He is like a little rock star.
Literally.
He loves music. He's self-taught on drums. He can play piano. And just last weekend, my father, who is a retired attorney turned professional musician, was visiting from Chicago. He brought his bass. And so we had the grandson on drums, the adult son on guitar, that's me, and then grandpa, my dad, on bass. And
no,
we were playing
way.
Like Black Sabbath and Ramones.
So cool.
And it was so fun. So music has always been a big part of everything that I do, and kind of an analogy that I relate to all creative endeavors that I've been involved in over the years.
I freaking love that.
That is awesome. I can't wait to hear your son's set list. That's so cool.
When I've met Miles, like I know, like from the minute that I met him, he's very much like sort of a carbon copy of you, you know, but it's like, I didn't realize he self-taught music and like he's playing, and I knew he could pick things up so quickly, but that
is not to go too far off topic too fast, but I feel like as parents, you know, we have to remember that our children are half of us and we want them to have a better experience than we did. And, you know, he's already so much more confident and very creative and so talented, but also dedicated when it comes to music than I was at that age. So I'm just like, do it, man. Go. Exactly. He says when he grows up, he wants to be a composer of soundtracks for video games.
Nice.
And the cool thing is in 2024, he doesn't have to wait until he's a grown up and, you know, in music school to do that. He has so much more software and tools available to him now that I could only dream of when I was his age. So
absolutely. The world is kind of his oyster at this point.
Yeah. We make a lot of weird art and music and all sorts of stuff in the Plum household. So it's very fun.
So I kind of love that to sort of dovetail into kind of the about you, because I think with this particular season, we really like to dig a little bit into the backstories of our guests and kind of understand like, okay, where were you, you know, as a kid that potentially may have led to where you are now? And I love how you talk about, you know, sort of making sure that, you know, your children have those opportunities that maybe you didn't have when you were a kid, and, you know, allowing them to sort of find their true selves in a better way, ideally, than you know, where we may have come from.
So, yeah, definitely.
So I'm curious to sort of start out with like little Chris Plum.
And oh, yeah.
Like 12-year-old Chris.
12-year-old Chris. No, little 12-year-old Chris wanted nothing more than to be on stage playing guitar in a rock band for, you know, 30,000 plus fans. And as a recovering codependent who no longer needs and like has to have that external validation, that's not as important to me anymore as it was when I was 12. But I still do think about it. I still do play and put out a lot of music. Yeah. But
evolution.
You know, I, as a little kid, there are all these different things you want to be when you grow up. And for me, it was like, I want to be a rock star, but I also want to be a famous comic book illustrator. Mm-hmm. But I also want to be a writer. But I also want to make movies. Yes. And like, you know, you can have a lot of crossover mm-hmm. among those things. Yeah. Being an expert in all of them takes a very unique person with a lot of support. I'm very fortunate that I had the support that I did. I feel like, and I try to have gratitude for this as often as I can remember, not everybody gets the same opportunities or the same level of support. Mm-hmm. Both of my parents were lawyers, and they supported me mm-hmm. wanting to go to art school and figure out what a career with a degree in art and design looks like. Awesome. I had friends in high school who wanted to do the same thing and be professional illustrators. And their parents were like, uh-uh, no way. Mm-hmm. You will never make a living. You'll have a miserable life. You can be a doctor. You can be a lawyer. Yeah. You know, very traditional right. things. Yeah. I have friends who are those things and are very successful sure. and enjoy it. I have friends who wanted to be artists and continue to be artists, but they had to go about things in a different mm-hmm. path. So mm-hmm. first and foremost, little Chris was very supported. Yes. My parents were like, don't go to law school. Draw pictures and make noise. We'll figure it out.
That's fantastic. So, make noise.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm really lucky that in western suburbs of Chicago, where I grew up, my middle school had a really amazing G4 Mac lab. Mm. And we had, like, I don't even remember what version it was, but early Photoshop. Mm. And we had a scanner, and we had a cool art teacher who was like, you can take pictures and scan them and chop them up yeah. and play mm. with the levels and apply filters, and you can make these like really interesting digital collages. Yeah. And I was immediately obsessed. Mm-hmm. I felt like a little kid with my Super Nintendo doing Mario Paint. It's like, you can make art with a computer. This yeah. is so weird. Yeah. So that was my introduction to what I ended up deciding I wanted to study as I got older. I always liked drawing. I always liked different album covers that yeah. had these mixed media sort of assemblages absolutely. Of things. By celebrity designers like David Carson, yes. who did a lot of album design for bands like Bush and Nine Inch Nails. Mm-hmm. Dave McKean, who is known for the covers he did for the DC Vertigo comic Sandman. Mm. He also did a lot of album art for like these aggro, industrial, and metal bands yeah. and weird combinations of paint and drawing and photography yeah. and digital illustrations. And so that's kind of where like this nexus of my love for music and my interest in graphic art really started to, you know, appear. Mm-hmm. Took some college credit courses at School of the Art Institute of Chicago in between years in high school. Thanks, Mom, for finding that program and signing me up for it. Nice. Did some internships working for companies doing a little bit more traditional graphic design. But in my meantime, in my personal time, you know, I had a student's license for Photoshop, and I was like crushing up leaves and putting them in plastic bags and scanning them and you know, making all kinds of weird yes. stuff. Senior year of high school, I took AP Studio Art, and you know, I graduated high school in 2002. I was the first student at that school whose entire portfolio was like digital work.
Really?
Oh, okay. Wow.
You know, so it was always funny. I was like, they got yeah. to know me at the local Kinko's. They're like, here comes the weird yeah. high school kid with purple hair who wears all black, who's like printing out another like 40 by 50 poster of like, you know, people lying on the bathroom floor with like, you know, weird stuff all around them.
Yeah.
But that was really fun. Went to U of M School of Art and Design. Continued to broaden, you know, my skill set. Their curriculum encouraged students to try lots and lots of different things. It was mandatory, actually. But I still knew at the end of the day, I want to make these things that cross over between like physical mm-hmm. and digital.
Yeah, yeah.
Somewhere in there, you know, I had, you've actually heard this when we worked at Duo and we did our origin story presentations, the whole irony of the left turn that my career took, which led into web development is that senior year when I was taking AP Studio Art, I didn't sign up for any math classes. And I had a high school counselor who was very well-intentioned, but was very traditional and was like, you can't expect to go to a good school and get a good education if you don't take math. And I was like, well, I want to go to art school. I'm fine with it. And she was like, well, you know, you did really well in computer math one and two, which was the way I escaped math junior year. Computer math one was intro to HTML and CSS, and computer math two was JavaScript and like basic C++.
Good loophole.
And she was like, you weird art kid who knows what you want to do. I'm not used to this. Like, you know, computers, you need a math credit. You did well enough that you can take AP computer science one and two. Disclosure. I am not an application programmer in the traditional sense. I have no passion for it. I've learned. I liked making websites because there's instant visual feedback. So I struggled through the first semester of this AP CS class. And I really struggled through the second one. I realized that my peers in that class would go home and program for fun. And I would go home and take digital pictures and play guitar and mash stuff up on my computer and just make weird stuff for fun.
You don't play with numbers for fun here.
Right. My stepfather was an application engineer and he did the best he could to help me. But I barely passed APCS 2, which didn't look very good. You know, second semester, senior year. Good grades across the board, and then this like mercy D minus,
been there,
which threatened my acceptance to U of M School of Art and Design. I had to write a huge essay defending myself, get letters of support from other teachers and professors and people I had worked with, saying like, and this is where like my parents' influence as attorneys came in. I argued that taking the mercy D minus and doing the best I could was a personal success because the other option that was given to me was like, you could withdraw, fail the class. Right. I was like, well, I don't want that. So go through all of art school, study, you know, digital art and design, work as a graphic designer. And slowly over time, I evolved into like full-time front-end web developer. And I was like, oh my God, I've come full circle. I always told myself, you can't do anything with computers because you're not smart enough and you don't have the love for it. I just had to sort of shift over a little bit and get more into like layout and interactivity and, you know, the kind of art and design that, you know, is critical to a web interface, right? So it's just kind of a weird shift back and forth. And I love it. I love making websites. I love trying to find how art and design can make a website so much more than the kind of very templatized, typical, you know, B2B software as a service marketing websites that we're all used to seeing, right? But yeah, somewhere in there, you know, I was traditional graphic designer doing merch and swag and posters. And then finally it was like,
I'm going to do digital. This is a happy place.
Yeah. Maybe I am not trash and I can do more than just this. Right.
I love our realizations that we're not trash. We actually have skill sets that we can leverage and people will pay us for those skill sets.
Yeah.
I love that. So I kind of want to, you know, kind of thinking, you know, with that audience in mind who may not know what web design is, you know, we might use the internet every single day. We encounter so many websites, but we don't necessarily know what goes into the actual creation and development of them. And I know there's so many ways to create websites now, but from your perspective, if you can sort of define for our audience that difference between, you know, what your specialty is, which is sort of that front end web developer side of things versus more of the back end, which might involve more of the code and the math that at least terrifies me.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And I'll do my best to elaborate it. I think there are many people with many thoughts and definitions on what differentiates these things. And actually in my current role, I am doing I guess what could be qualified as full stack development, because I'm responsible for the entirety of the website. That includes how it's hosted, how the servers are provisioned and managed, all sorts of other stuff that I typically leaned on others to handle those things. So I'm still, you know, learning a ton now. Nice. But yeah, I mean, you know, for me, when I think of web development in terms of front ends, I think of, you know, the Holy Trinity. I think of HTML, which is your markup. I think of CSS, which is what it looks like and how it's laid out. And I think of JavaScript, which is usually, in, at least as far as the work I do is concerned, for interaction, interactivity. Yes, there's so many frameworks and there's so many tools and so many things that have been created by the community that are open source and freely available for a long time that make things much, much easier. You know, you can spin up a website not knowing intricately or deeply the difference between a div element in HTML and an article element in HTML. And there are people that have kind of solved those things and it's very easy to spin something up now. You might not understand like how a CSS style or attribute is actually telling the browser to change what something looks like or what its position is, because you have things like Tailwind CSS, which is great. And I use it all the time. It's a framework that allows you to get very specific and atomic and just kind of put these, they're called classes, on a single element that will just define like, oh, I want it positioned here and I want it to be this color, and on hover I want it to be that color, and you can just kind of stack those without ever writing a line of CSS. And it's cool, but I had to learn the old school way. I had to learn from scratch. I didn't have those things. And it's like a lot of experimentation, a lot of breaking things, a lot of reading forum posts and referencing stuff.
Going on the Google, the Reddit, trying to figure out, and somebody else already solved this problem.
So that's when I think of front end, you know, those are the things that come to mind. You know, the opposite side, and this is where frameworks really help someone like me. Like I've mentioned before, I care a lot about layout and color and, you know, subtle, tasteful, but enjoyable interactivity. You know, I'm not a PHP developer. If
what
you ask
PHP for the layperson in the room,
what is PHP? I mean, you know, there are so many different application languages that, you know, allow you know, web-based software to do things. PHP is something that I've always avoided my entire life. And now I'm starting to get under the hood and mess around with things. The website technology that I've been using for almost the last 10 years, ironically enough, because it was never that well known to begin with, the content management system is called Statamic. It's a portmanteau of the words static and dynamic. And very few people I've ever worked with have ever known that or been able to understand how to pronounce it.
Today I learned, honestly.
It wasn't always this way, but Statamic is built off of something called Laravel. Laravel is a framework for web applications that is built on top of PHP. So you end up with this like interesting stratification of technologies that are designed and developed to simplify other technologies that, you know, kind of obfuscate the need for deep understanding of how everything is working. So like, I feel very proficient and confident in my HTML, CSS, and vanilla JavaScript abilities. But, you know, anytime something like really custom has to be made, I'm just like, I hope somebody made an add-on for this. I don't want to learn a new thing. It hurts my brain. I'm resistant to that.
Too much learning.
Too much stuff in the brain. So, yeah. I mean, kind of going back to what you said about, you know, you've learned things the old-fashioned way, right? You had to learn HTML, learn how to write CSS, learn how to write JavaScript.
Learned a lot by doing. Just by doing and breaking.
And breaking things and learning things. Is that how you would recommend somebody who's like, I want to get into this? Can I, you know, I know that there's platforms like Webflow and Framer and Squarespace that kind of automate a lot of the stuff that you just talked about. But is it helpful to have that sort of fundamental foundation of knowing, you know, what is a div? How do I set up classes? How do I do these things by hand? Should I need to?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I mean, part of the thing that allowed me to make the jump from designing what a web page should look like and passing that off to an engineer to build it and finally being like, maybe I could just build it. You know, at the time, the ability to interact with a web page you're looking at in real time and play around with the developer tools, you know, most all of the major browsers have these built-in developer tools that allow you to see what is the browser looking at?
Right.
What is the markup on this page? And in real time, play around with those things and change things and turn things off and on and rearrange stuff. Like, maybe those tools had existed for a while and I was just ignorant of them, but the tool set was becoming available and user-friendly enough that someone like me, who really doubted myself and went through this experience where I was just like, wow, you know, this low grade in this hardcore programming class put my entire art education at risk. I am not smart enough or good enough to do anything hardcore with computers. It allowed me, you know, those were the training wheels where I was like, you know what, I can actually like mess around with stuff. Like, what is a div? Oh, it's just an element that is designating a division of space. It's kind of this generic catch-all. Oh, it can have a background color. That's weird. How do I do that? Right. Like, how would I recommend to someone today if they want to learn how to make websites? I mean, this is a good thing and also a frustrating thing. There's like too much information out there, right? Yeah. Like, how do you even get started?
What's the source of truth? Or,
For me, and this helped a lot back in the day, and a lot of these people, I made a little short list, are still doing stuff today. So I am a learn by doing kind of person. I own and have read and mostly referenced like big, thick, hard copy books about HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. But like, reading about it is so much more different than
doing it,
right?
Right.
So there are these like, I don't know if they would want to be called this. I look up to them in this way, like these celebrity quote unquote developers that have just so much information out there and it's all free. And like these people also have like classes that you can pay for and things like that. Yeah. But people like Jen Simmons, who has a YouTube account called Layout Land, and she's a developer and design advocate at Mozilla.
Okay.
And so she's like very involved in the production of the Firefox web browser in terms of like, is it up to spec with like all the latest capabilities, right? You know, she, when we were working together, Hafsa, and I was building the websites that other designers were giving me specs for, CSS Grid was new and not totally supported. And that's like the standard now. But like, I remember watching her YouTube channel and she just made it so interesting and like, dare I say, fun, because she would take like these cool old like avant-garde like music posters, like jazz posters that are on these really interesting grids, you know, almost like a Mondrian kind of like spattering of colors and different squares and shapes. And she would be like, I wonder if I can recreate this in CSS Grid. Like, let's give it a shot.
Cool.
And so she would just like kind of walk through her process and build stuff out and then be like, you know, oh, how do these columns collapse when the window, when the viewport gets like narrower? Like, can we make like our sort of, you know, mobile, so to speak, version of this? And just watching someone else do it and being like, oh my God, this just clicked with me. I get it now. Like, this is so cool. And then wanting to just go try it myself. So she's great. Rachel Andrew. She had a CSS workshop course that I took with very clean, simple, easy to understand, well-edited videos.
Her work is really good.
Sarah Drasner mm-hmm. is another one that I like. And then this dude who my former mentor and manager, she turned me on to this guy, Wes Boss. Okay. B-O-S.
Nice.
This dude has been writing about and talking about more than just front-end web design. Like, he is skilled at all kinds of application development, but his TikTok channel is insane.
Nice. Okay.
Like, he'll put up these like little 1 minute clips.
Oh, I love those.
And okay. he does something that I love so much. He'll and I think like sometimes people will like send him things that they see that they mm-hmm. think are interesting, but he'll just like pick something that he thinks he's interesting, like a button. And the button has this like rotating, like shiny edge that kind of shimmers and sparkles. And he's like, I was looking at this button on this website and I was like, whoa, man, how did they do that? That's so weird. Yeah. So I opened it up and I took it apart. Wow. And I actually found a way that I think is even more efficient and performative and easier to do this. Okay. And then he'll just like walk through. You know, and he's got his code editor up and he's like changing stuff in real time. And I'm just sitting there like drinking it and being like, yes, 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 this is awesome. I'm going to go make every button look like this now on my company's website. Right.
I love that.
That's what everyone needs.
Exactly.
Is a walkthrough. Absolutely. Just step by step. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so many of us are visual learners. So being able mm-hmm. to see something, you know, that practical is so helpful because it's like, oh, yeah, this is a thing that I probably interact with every day. Somebody can go in here and just, you know, recreate it or, you know, remodel it in their own vision.
Yeah.
And that's so helpful to see that breakdown.
So I kind of went off there, but my advice to someone would be like, if you want to learn how to make websites, mm-hmm. start thinking about like what websites do you look at mm-hmm. that you actually think are interesting, right? Like whether or not you have the, you know, sort of deeper educational background about the fundamentals of art and design and you're like critiquing, you know, what's actually at play, right? Like, you know, just something that resonates with you, mm-hmm. you know, pop open the dev tools and, you know, look up some of these folks and like check out their YouTube channels or their TikTok channels and like listen to them talk and then, you know, kind of follow along. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite tools of all time, and I use it all the time, is this website called CodePen.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, CodePen's the best. CodePen's so sick. It's like this open community museum of just weird little experiments that people have done that are publicly available.
Absolutely.
You can see like the markup, you can see the style, mm-hmm. you can see whatever script, and it supports many languages and you have an instant visual result.
I would plus one CodePen, even so I'm not a web developer of any sort. I try to understand the fundamentals behind it because obviously sometimes I work with web developers, but even just for me as an animator, I've used CodePen to just understand a little bit better how cascading style sheets work with HTML mm-hmm. and like other plugins, because literally you're able to see, you know, the actual code that you're working with and see the actual output, and you can kind of futz with it a little bit, change colors, change things here and there, figure out why it's broken, usually in my case, but it's
totally.
So fun. And I love that tools like that are so easily accessible and generally free, and there's like a huge community around it, so you can ask, you know, as many questions as you have and you'll generally find some answers to help you along.
How many of us at this table right now in 2024 get excited about receiving emails about stuff? Like, raise of hands.
Boy.
No one. I signed up for CodePen's like weekly email because every week they send out a little digest of like what the most popular, you know, pens are, most popular experiments. I get so excited when
that
I get that email.
Actually helpful.
It is.
Yeah.
And not unsubscribed.
Even if it's something that, you know, isn't relevant to the work that I do, it's still so cool and interesting to see like, someone is doing an experiment of like OpenGL web browser based animation and 3D modeling using, you know, just like technologies that I've never touched or looked into. And it's just interesting to be like, oh, wow, what is this?
Yeah.
This is so cool. Like,
continuous, constant.
It's inspiring. Yeah, it's like a constant feed of inspiration. Yeah. And in fact check me on this, I think in like almost all cases, like if you publish a code pen, you agree that it's like a fully public yeah. open source license, right? So yeah. like
you can choose to make it private if you yeah. want to, but I think generally the default is like you can, this is something that other people can kind of experiment yeah. with or clone on their own.
So there have been yeah. times where I've seen something, I've been like, that is so sick. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take this yep. and you can like remix other people's stuff
very,
and like,
very useful.
And then, you know, make your own version and make all of the modifications you yes. want and then be like, I'm using this. That's yeah. awesome. You know, put a little thank you in the, yeah, in the little, source,
little
you know? Yeah.
No, this is, well, obviously you're a font of knowledge for this, Chris. This is exactly why I wanted you on our podcast. And I think something you're kind of teasing out here too, is that you don't necessarily need to have school to teach you, you know, mm-hmm. these crafts.
It's true.
You mm-hmm. know, I mean, both of you can kind of speak to this where it's like, I think a lot of what we've learned in, you know, our current careers, what, you know, has been sort of the backbone of our livelihoods, we've just learned on our own, you know, through right. through research, through experimentation, through, you know, reaching out to our peers on the internet and, you know, kind of learning from them. So like a lot of the resources that you've already mentioned, Chris, you know, you can go on the internet right now and mm-hmm. check out CodePen. You can read some of these books, you know, it's like, it's all here for you. You just kind of have to take that time to dig in and do that research.
Exactly. Yeah. I started my first year at the School of the Art Institute in Chicago, and I came out of the first year totally burned out, thinking I know all this conceptual art. Mm-hmm. I took performance and sound and all these things. Mm-hmm. And thinking back on that now, yes, that foundation laid the work for the way that I think.
Yeah.
But it doesn't necessarily... I mean, besides the integrity and the consistency of being in a studio or in right. front of the computer all day, it doesn't necessarily form the career that you're thinking about 10, 20 years yeah, later, right? Exactly. So what have you taken from your earlier years into how you work now?
Like, oh, yeah.
What's that's, foundational still?
That's a great yeah. question. I mean, let's see. What would a good example be? So... this was, I wish I could remember the name of the author. I should have put this in my notes. There's a book apart installment called Designing for Emotion. And I'll have to look up again and see the author. But so often in my professional career as a design-informed web developer, I'll get a request from someone who, you know, they want something to happen on the website. Like, mm-hmm. I saw someone else does this and we need to do this too. And like, mm-hmm. I always remind them, like, I know I'm not the ideal customer persona, right? I'm not the target audience, but like, why do you want to do that? Right. That's so mm-hmm. boring. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's ugly. It's,
yeah.
So like,
and it's ugly,
you know, not that. My big takeaway from art school was like, make it pretty, but like yeah. How are we going to get like an emotional reaction yes, out of the audience absolutely. With this? Mm-hmm. Right. Like a lot of art school is learning, you know, your audience mm-hmm. and then choosing how much you want to play into or defy their expectations yeah. or just say, I'm going to do what I like and what makes me happy right. and
I'm
you know
for this.
Yeah, exactly, mm-hmm. right? Yeah, just like sort of being able to say like, are we going to do something that is going to resonate with anyone? Like, is someone going to care about this?
Yep.
So like, let's break that down. Right. Like, you know, if we want to make something exciting, mm-hmm. like let's write down as many adjectives as we can think of that play into like our goal to get this emotional
yeah.
reaction. Let's break it down. Let's look at like other work that gives us that mm-hmm. feeling and gives us that reaction and mm-hmm. like take it apart and analyze it and critique it. Like, are we trying to communicate stability? Well, there's a layout implication there mm-hmm. and there's a typographic implication there and maybe a color implication as well mm-hmm. if we're trying to do something that's just like much more crazy and sure. exciting, right? A visual thinker and a person who has gone through art school and yeah. thought about like, you know, point, line, shape, yeah. color, texture, mm-hmm. you know, the sort of symphony of how these things come together mm-hmm. to like evoke something in another person.
Right.
Like that'll make sense to me, but to a non-visual person
right.
who is just looking for a result,
yeah.
they might not know that that's a question worth asking. And then you get to like kind of share that with them yes. and say like, Okay, cool. So you want to achieve X. Mm-hmm. Let, you know, trust me mm-hmm. to get you to X or better without just copying what this other site did, mm-hmm. right? Like, let's do something more interesting.
Right. Yeah, maybe the Apple website isn't appropriate for your, you know, health or fitness, you know, product or right. what have you.
Totally.
It's the story again, right? It's, I think this has kind of been a theme throughout all of our episodes, is sort of digging into what the story is that, you know, a client or whomever it might be is really trying to get to, and using our skill sets to kind of tease that out, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, who are we designing this for? What is the topic? What is that emotion or that mood that we want to evoke?
What's important to them? Mm-hmm. What's not important to them, exactly. right?
Yeah.
What are the other things that they're interested in? Yeah, yeah, I mean, Hafsa, when we worked together mm-hmm. on the brand and creative team at Duo, we had leadership that really valued our expertise and our desire to get like down to the bottom mm-hmm. of those questions. Yeah. And we were so lucky,
yeah,
like
very lucky, yeah.
Before and after working for that company, I've experienced a very wide mm-hmm. array of different types of leaders, and you know, they're human beings with different yeah. hopes and dreams and things that are important to them. And I can't imagine how difficult it must be for a sort of non-visual person mm-hmm. who maybe isn't interested in, or maybe, you know, hasn't been exposed to a lot of art and design.
Right.
Like how hard it must be for them to take like, trust me, bro.
Yeah.
Like, let me do this. Like there's a lot of yeah. insecurity yes. around doing something that has
yes.
an emotional mm-hmm. reaction.
Yeah.
Especially in the tech world.
Especially in the tech wow. world. Yeah. Where there's sort of a certain mindset that it is kind of pervasive. And I think that's what makes it an interesting space for designers in particular, because I think that design thinking isn't always something that is ingrained in, you know, the tech industry, especially on the corporate level.
Totally.
And when it's introduced in, you know, using Duo as an example, mm-hmm. like I think design thinking was really valued, you know, by the leaders of that company. And it really showed in how we were able to thoughtfully craft messaging and thoughtfully craft visuals around that messaging. And, you know, we saw the results in how our customers related to us and how, mm-hmm. you know, people within the tech industry reacted to our work. And so I think that's something that is really helpful for non-creatives to think about, is like, yeah, there is that trust me bro element of it,
yeah.
but
yeah.
it's like, we're designers for a reason. We're
totally.
Giving you these recommendations for a reason, because we understand how to tell stories in a visual way. And we think about the way that people might interact with our work, whether it's, you know, a poster or an album cover mm-hmm. or a website or a video, like all yeah. of these things are different, very intentional touch points.
Yeah, no, telling the story, figuring out the story. I want to say this also comes from that designing for emotion,
yeah.
A book apart installment that I mentioned, but a philosophy that I apply to, you can apply it to the entirety of a website. And when I say website, I'm specifically talking about like a marketing website mm-hmm. for a business, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. You know, just like a very long interactive brochure yeah. that is like begging someone yes. to please
subscribe,
get a demo yes. or try this product for free, or like, you know, talk to our sales team, right? You can apply this to an entire website, and you should be able to like take it down to every individual page of the website. I didn't come up with this. This is from Designing for Emotion, but like look at each page mm-hmm. or like each project or each website, and what do you want someone to learn? Mm-hmm. How do you want someone to feel? And what do you want them to do? Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's oversimplifying it. Like if you can answer those three questions with confidence, mm-hmm. like you're off to the races.
Absolutely.
If you can't answer them with confidence, now you've got some room for like experimenting and trying some different things and like trying to get that feedback. Mm-hmm. And we've talked a lot about web development, but you know, I was a web developer / creative director mm-hmm. and kind of like micro creative team
yep.
leader for a couple years mm-hmm. before the position that I'm at now. And it was awesome. I loved it. I loved being able to be the person who cleared the kind of typical traditional business nonsense out of the way
yeah.
to let artists do art stuff.
Absolutely.
But like, that was always a struggle with other people who were like, why doesn't the homepage use all of these key terms? And like, I really, you know, someone else saying, I really want the website to talk about these features and talk about these technical specifications. Mm-hmm. And it's so hard to persuade someone that like, that's not really a story. Right. Like that's feature dumping.
Yes.
Anybody can do that. Anybody How are we going to actually, you know, persuade someone to like pay attention to us or like be memorable? Like what's the story, right? Like what's the value that we're trying to sell? Mm-hmm. Colleague, Chelsea Lewis, amazing designer and amazing design thinker who is never afraid to ask those hard questions. Mm-hmm. It's like, what's the value? Exactly. Why do I care? Mm-hmm. Do I care that this like machine learning enabled thingamajig is, you know, this much faster than their thingamajig?
Right.
No, but like maybe the DevOps engineer cares that they could spend more time with their family on family movie night instead of like, you know, 8 p.m. on a Friday trying to figure out why their application is offline and the customer's pissed, right? So, you know, what is the story?
What's the heart
is
of it?
Always the thing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I love that approach. I wanted to, we have a little bit of time. I mean, you've kind of touched on this, you know, throughout the topics that we've been chatting about, but for, you know, somebody who might be looking at, you know, being a web developer, being a creative director, what are some of the roles that you collaborate with? Because your work is, it can't be done in a silo. So like...
My work right now is done in a silo.
Well, what does your work look like in a day?
Yeah.
That's only partially true. Yes. Like I've been really, really fortunate in the past to have collaborated with a lot of really freaking talented web designers. Mm-hmm. People who maybe don't have the experience actually writing the code, but they understand like, hey, I'm going to give you an example of what something should look like, but I would love for this to be a global component that could fit into any context on the page. And we could swap out, you know, these aspects of it, right? Like I've worked with people who can design a beautiful static version of a page and they know that it's going to be, you know, squishy at different viewport sizes and vary across, you know, browsers and things. So cross compatibility is like better now than ever before. But you know, I don't have someone like that in my current role. So in my current role, I'm responsible for maintaining the very well built website that I inherited. It was put together by an amazing, super talented design and development agency called Fixel. Amazing group of people. They're so cool. Yes. They were so cool about like this company wanting to bring control of their marketing website in-house and sort of sunset the relationship with the agency because the company's scaling and like the agency has more than one customer, right?
Yeah.
But they did a great job. So I'm responsible for maintaining what existed and building upon it and knowing how it functions and how it is designed, but then like designing, you know, new layout components or, you know, new compelling interactive like ways to present content and making sure it kind of, you know, feels cohesive and fits in with what's there. I'm responsible for like, you know, server maintenance and management. Typically that was a different role that I would collaborate with, you know, our old buddy, Zach Gambrell, DevOps guy who, you know,
another rock star.
Yeah, exactly. Like something isn't working. Okay. Well, the back end guy can just go take care of it. So like, I've got to do some of that stuff now.
So you're like a one man team a little bit.
Kind of, which has its pros and cons, right? Mm-hmm. Like I feel confident enough for the first time in my career that I was willing to like, swim a little bit out of my depth and know that it would be okay. And I'd figure it out. I mean, I collaborate all the time with content people, with marketing operations people who want to, you know, they're evaluating a tool that does like really cool interactive product demos. How do we get that on the website? Can we test it out? What does it look like on a page? What does it look like in like a modal popover? Da 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 da. Yeah. So I'm collaborating with all different kinds of people who have great ideas and want to get things on the website. And I'm like, oh, that's really interesting. Let's figure out what that looks like. Right. Yeah. So, yeah.
Awesome. And it's kind of, I love that, you know, and I feel like a lot of designers have that experience where you might find yourself working with an extended team. You know, to your point, it might be marketers, it could be content writers, it could be other designers. And sometimes you are all of those things.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Like, you know, I like to write for fun and, you know, I've written lyrics for songs and I've written short stories and poems. I'm not the right person to critique, you know, our senior content person's like announcement blog post talking about new product features and stuff like that. Right. But, you know, there are times sometimes where, you know, we're laying out copy that we've gotten for a certain page. And it's just like, I kind of feel like this would feel a little more human if it sounded like this. And if you are fortunate, which I am very much so, you're on a supportive team that, you know, people are working without ego and open to collaboration. And you can say, hey, I was just wondering, like, you know, I was looking at this and, you know, I just as a thought, I wondered if it might just feel better if it was like that. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, like people are willing and open to just like, we're all in this together. Let's like make it as good as it can be.
That's
right.
So important.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I love hearing from people too when they're just like, hey, this feels kind of awkward on this page. And like, I didn't understand how to get here, how to do this. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah, sure.
It's reciprocal. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's take a look at that. Let's try something different.
It's good. It kind of goes back to, I think I try to mention this every episode. Maybe I don't, but not being afraid to ask questions no matter what role you're in.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think it's so important to be able to have that, you know, that confidence to say, if you notice something, you know, don't be afraid to bring it up to the right person. You know, maybe it's, you know, just a small observation, maybe it's a bigger one, but if you're at a good, you know, work environment, you should feel like you have that safe space to be able to, you know, raise a hand and at least ask the question.
Quality of leadership dictates whether or not people are comfortable asking questions. Like, you need good leaders who are actually, you know, cultivating that, right? Because, you know, if you ask too many questions, it doesn't matter if it's from a good place. Right. With poor, toxic leadership, you can be quickly labeled as like, you know, a disruptive rabble rouser. Like
too many questions.
Yeah.
No. Of course, it's a good muscle to toughen up.
Exactly.
Especially as you're starting out, you don't want to be shut down.
Absolutely. Right.
Yeah. Absolutely. I want to ask, as we kind of come up to time with our chat, I've been enjoying this. I always learn so much from both of you guys, and I'm glad to chat with Chris today. But I wanted to ask, what do you kind of feel is on the horizon with your industry, with this career set? And, you know, obviously top of mind whenever I ask this question, at least, is like, what are the implications of, you know, something like AI? But I mean, feel free to, you know, kind of go beyond that as well from your perspective.
Yeah, it's such a great question. And I don't know if I have like a succinct answer for it, but like, these are things that I think about quite a bit. At the highest level, for me personally, like, since I've done a lot of different things in my career, like ranging from traditional graphic design to leading a team of artists to you know, web development, you know, which I wouldn't consider hardcore coding, but, you know, to young Chris feels, you know, my idea of what hardcore coding could be. I am trying to find the right balance of, like, you know, going back to some of the things we were talking about at the beginning, you know, when you're 12 years old and, you know, you're bright eyed and you have this like perfect dream job in mind, right? Like, how much of that are you willing to just like, I don't want to say like let go of, but just sort of like be content, right? Like, I see a possible future where, like, you know, you grind and like network because you want to climb that ladder and like get to that, you know, sort of idealized thought that you had of what it would be like to be at the top. But I'm just like, you know, I'm a dad and, you know, I'm in a very serious long-term relationship, and like, I think I'm happier when I'm just content. Mm-hmm. Like, it was not an ego blow for me to go from, you know, at least on paper, like a creative director, which is perhaps considered at, you know, one rung on the ladder to back to like, you know, full-time web developer, web designer.
Yeah.
It's like, that's fine. I like making stuff and I need to support myself and my family. Mm-hmm. So like, that's cool. Like, I'm okay with not just being like, oh, well, in this many years, I'm going to be here and then I'll be there. It's more like, yeah, if something comes along and it looks like a cool opportunity, like I'll give it a shot. Right.
Yeah.
But for the meantime, I do really enjoy making websites. Yes. You know, I see how AI tools are threatening illustrators and artists and, you know, people who do, I guess, what I might call like more traditional graphic design, even if it's digital.
Yeah.
And like, if I run into a really weird, obscure bug that I'm struggling to fix, and I'm only finding Stack Overflow posts from like 8 years ago that aren't helping me get there.
Yeah.
Like, I can ask, I can formulate a prompt for ChatGPT to like point me in the right direction and save myself a lot of time and headache. Like, computers are really good at speaking computer.
Yes.
Like, machines know machines. So like, it is a very useful debugging tool. Mm-hmm. It's not perfect, but but at the same time, it's like, well, you know, the days are numbered for this, right? Like, there will be some leaders somewhere who maybe don't quite understand why they should value like a human made thing, even if it's digital, and they want to see a line graph go up and to the right as hard as possible. And then it's like, well, why do I need someone like Chris who's going to ask a bunch of questions about what is this experience going to make the customer feel like before he even starts prototyping stuff? And why does he have to go through 10 prototypes and want to A/B test two of them and blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, just tell the machine to make a website. Right.
Yeah.
Like, that's a real thing.
Possibly,
And, you know, how fast or slow that will impact me personally, I have yet to see.
Yeah, TBD. But for now, you're in a good place.
For now, I'm in a good place. You know, if I get to a situation where someone's like, hey, Chris, we need a, you know, guitarist to be in this band. And, you know, we'll, you know, I don't want to spend my life on the road. I've got a, you know, 12-year-old son that I love hanging out with and making music with. But, you know, it's like, yeah, you know, we'll go like tour like, you know, Japan and you know, have some shows and stuff, and be like, yeah, I'll do that.
Hafsa will be in the front row.
I will be the groupie always.
Yeah. Chris, it is such a pleasure to meet you. And actually, so your response a moment ago was so refreshing about centering parenthood relationships.
Yes.
And that was not what I expected any of our guests to say as we talk about our future and our professional life. So what a great way to close it out.
Thank you. I think like so many people that we don't know personally, but we look up to and admire, that, you know, we think of as being these like, and I'm not saying they weren't, but like these successful creative visionaries, you know, and then like you read, you know, biographies about them or see like film adaptations of these biographies. You know, I don't care if it's like, you know, the Steve Jobs of the world, or, you know, like, I don't know, pick any famous rock star that's ever lived. Like, you can ask the question, like, were they so successful because they had something to prove, because they had this unhealed injury, and how did their success lead to like their happiness or unhappiness in their day-to-day life and like with their relationships? And like, a lot of the most famous people that I admired my whole life, turns out they were like really unhappy and everyone around them were miserable. And like, I don't want to be like that.
Yeah.
I'll make a cool looking website. I will hoard the creative energy, like as much of it as I can for myself, and, you know, kind of like dose it out here and there in the day to day. But like, hard work is oftentimes rewarded with more work. And, you know, I want to do a good job and I want to innovate, and then I want to save all the rest for like stuff that I like doing. If it's like, you know, making music or making my own website. So
absolutely, that is the perfect way, I think, to sign this off. Thank you so much, Chris.
Thanks for having me.
Such a pleasure.
If you like this podcast, be sure to heart, like, and subscribe to Cadence wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at CadencePod, or check out our episodes and more at thecadencepod.com. While we are proudly based in Ypsilanti, Michigan, we are recording out of Fifth Avenue Studios in Ann Arbor at Ann Arbor District Library. And we hope wherever you're creating from in the world, you are marching to your own cadence. Thanks for listening.